party last night was awfully crazy. I wish we taped it. I danced my face off and had this one girl completely naked.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Freshman 15. I am John McHugh here with Brendan May. We will be here for 15 minutes taking your calls in a little while. 877-337-5555. And we want to lead off today with, of course, the big story in town. It is Harvey Day at Citi Field. Unfortunately, did not go the Mets' way. The Mets scored in the first inning on a Rick Ankiel double. That doesn't usually happen. And then Harvey had a good start to it, but then in the third inning, Joey Votto on a 3-0 count took Harvey deep, 2-1 Reds at that point. No scoring until the bottom of the fifth, where the Mets tied it up on a sacrifice fly. Really lucky that Jay Bruce kind of botched the throw, was up the line, couldn't get Ruben Tejada from third. And then to the top of the seventh, the Mets gave up the lead on a Brandon Phillips RBI double. Harvey's still in at this point. And then a little dribbler scored Votto in. That would be 4-2 Reds. Then in the bottom of that inning, Daniel Murphy drove in Ruben Tejada. Then the Rick Ankiel triple gets Matt Harvey off the hook. And then the play that put the Reds ahead, Ike Davis thought that a ball was foul, didn't go for it right down the line. 5-4 at that point. Then a little blooper drove in 2-7-4. Aroldis Chapman set the Mets down in the bottom of the ninth, and it was a Reds sweep.
It's so funny because if this were any other starter besides Matt Harvey, this would be a phenomenal start. 6 1/3 innings pitched, 9 hits allowed, 4 earned runs, that's bad. 6 strikeouts, 3 walks. Terrible, terrible outing for Matt Harvey. But if this were Nice, Hefner, G, Markham, this would be a phenomenal start. But just because it's Harvey, he's in the focus for so long. He's the main attraction. People come to the ball. The ballpark was packed today. There's so much people there today. It was packed, and that was just because of Matt Harvey. So much is expected of him because he's all the Mets got.
I mean, they give out shirts for this guy. You buy a ticket, you get a Matt Harvey shirt for on the days he starts. I mean, the thing that I love about him, you were saying, anybody else would be a bad start. Anybody else, the wheels would have come off because he let up that 2-run home run. And he just goes right back at it. Most of the Mets are the Patriots, Hefner, Knees. Like you were saying, the wheels would have come off. It would have been a mess. Harvey, I feel like, was the only one who could have kept that the way
he's so resilient. You'll see him. You're right. He gives up, you know, these runs, and then he bounces. He's a dog out there. He bounces back. He fires strikes. He really controls the game well. And I think that this performance, obviously, he was playing the Reds, who are the best team that he's pitched against so far. And I think that their discipline, their smarts as hitters, is really what contributed to this game. Not really Matt Harvey struggling, because I thought he was good. I thought he hit his spots. I thought he was throwing some very good pitches. Listen, the Reds are really disciplined. Senju Chu, high OBP, first in the National League. Joey Votto, insanely high OBP. Very, very, very smart hitter. And those are the guys who got to him.
And there was a point in the game, I think it was the top of the fifth, where Harvey loaded the bases with two out and then did not look stressed about it at all. I mean, yesterday, Nice loaded the bases in the first inning, let up 3 runs, obviously. I mean, any other pitcher, that would have been a problem. Harvey, at no point did you feel like that was going to get out of hand.
No, he had everything in control, and he's a smart guy. He realizes that if you give up 2 earned runs, although with the Mets, the way the Mets are hitting right now, you really can't. That's not even good enough. But if you give up 2 runs, as long as you don't compound the issue, throw balls, get, you know, very wild, then you can really kind of keep things in check and keep things moving along.
Yeah, you feel bad for the guy, though, because like you said, the Mets' offense is absolutely dead. Just dead. You have Wright and Murphy, who are kind of hitting it, but if they're on any other team, they're middle of the road right now. They're the best that the Mets have.
Well, this is what you get with just the way that the team was put together. They did not invest heavily in players. They came in with the guys that they had. Duda, you knew. Ike Davis has been just terrible. And when you're not investing in guys like Michael Bourne, guys who are free agents in the offseason, which the Mets had a chance to get. They would have had to give up a first-round pick to get him, but they had a chance to get him. They were thinking about getting him. But if you don't, the safety is taken out. Because those are consistent players. Michael Bourne, you know what you're going to get out of him. Ike Davis, you really don't know what you're going to get. You can get, you know, a month like this that we've seen. You can get a terrible, terrible stretch of games that, you know, he's a young guy. He'll bring it out into the field, and we saw that in this game. He let up a run, a double that was just a dumb, dumb, dumb mistake for him to
To let it go.
Yeah.
He's
mentally, he's out of the game.
Oh, absolutely. You could see after it, he even looked back at the umpire and just in shock.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to field that ball. There's one out. He could have turned 2 on that. Inning could have been over. We could be talking about a completely different game.
And this is the difference between a guy like Matt Harvey and a guy like Ike Davis. Ike Davis gets down hitting, he strikes out, he, you know, flails at pitches, whatever. He'll look bad at the plate. Always been a good fielder, but when you start to bring your hitting troubles out onto the field with you, Gary was talking about during the game today, or I guess it was Kevin was talking about during the game today, if you bring your hitting troubles out to the field with you, that's when it starts to, the wheels have come off already. You got to send him down. Send him down to the minors right now.
Absolutely. I was actually at the game last night, and people were chanting Ike Vegas. So, I mean, it's rough. And this was a throwaway year anyway, but I saw a stat.
You want to see promise, though. You want to see progression. Yeah, you want to see people getting better. You want to see development. We haven't seen that of Ike. We haven't seen that out of Ruben. Murphy a little bit. Harvey's been the only bright spot.
Oh, absolutely. And I saw a stat. It is the worst the Mets have been at this point in the season since 2001. Think about the seasons they've had. 2002, 3, and 4.
Well, that's the thing. They've been able to get out to good starts and then just fall apart after that. But if they're not getting out to the good starts, what do you have to hang your hat on? There's no collapse if you're not at a high point already.
The whole season's a collapse.
The whole season is a collapse. The 2013 Mets season is a collapse from day one.
All right, so now we're going to go on to Eastern Conference Game 1 tonight in Miami.
Miami will lose this game tonight. I'm saying it right now. They were lazy. They came out, you know, very slow and lethargic the first game against Chicago. The same thing's going to happen against Indiana.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. I mean, you got to be on upset watch tonight.
Indiana's as physical as Chicago was. Indiana will grind you just like they did the Knicks. And really, let's be honest here, the Knicks were supposed to win that series, and Indiana destroyed them. They beat them up down low. They beat them up shooting threes. They did anything you could possibly do to really throw the Knicks off their game. I think they can do the same thing to the Heat.
Yeah, I mean, tonight, I see the Pacers winning this one. But then, as you mentioned, they kind of play the same game as the Bulls, but the Heat figured that out. The Bulls had their one game. They had that one moment of glory, and then the Heat just shut them down after that. I think that's what you're going to see in this. I think it's either going to be the Pacers could figure out something in the Heat, could take it six or seven games. It's either going to be that or the Heat are going to run away with it. There is absolutely no way the Pacers take the series easily.
Really? I think that the Pacers have a better chance than a lot of other teams in the series because of the way that they play physically. We saw them dominate the Knicks, and they stay with that big lineup. They have Roy Hibbert, who's 7'2 at center. Listen, no one in the NBA today plays a power forward and a center. You play like a center like Chandler and then a power forward like Melo. And really, let's be honest, he's a small forward. Pacers do that. And the Pacers don't shy away from doing that. They don't get scared when the game gets out of control. We were talking about Matt Harvey before, and the Pacers are the same way, and we'll talk about the Spurs later. It's the same thing with them. They stay in control. Doesn't matter what the score is. Doesn't matter the way that the game's going. They stay in control, and you can really tell that while they are composed, they can kind of bring the other team off their game a little bit with the way they play.
Yeah, and I was thinking about the series before. It's weird. You look at some series, any sport really, and you see an X factor. And this, there really isn't one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just how the Pacers come out tonight.
Yeah.
But there's no one player, one moment in each game that you look to. It's just they match up well, but I think the Heat are definitely going to take it.
I think that the Pacers are going to come out a lot more committed than the Heat. And I think that's going to be a storyline from the get-go. I think the Pacers are going to be physical, we talked about it, but also just try harder, you know? They're going to go after rebounds. They're going to bully the Heat. They're going to run and run and run like we see you know, they're a slow team, but when they run, they can be successful.
I mean, I think sometimes you see with the Heat that they have a kind of a sense of entitlement.
Yeah.
Like, we are
They get lazy. They get lazy.
Very, very lazy. They we are the Heat. We're better than you.
Yeah. You saw it with that whole conversation with Frank Vogel, the coach of the Pacers, calling the Heat just another team. The Heat weren't like, well, he's a good coach. They were like, no, we're the Heat.
Yeah, we're not another team. We are the Miami Heat.
That's what they said.
Yeah. And that kind of can do that.
Yeah, they've deserved it. They've deserved it.
But you never want to do that.
No.
You can be the best team. You can go undefeated in anything.
Yeah.
You can't let your guard down because this is professional sports. Somebody will utilize that.
MJ was so cocky before games, gambling, staying up until 6 a.m. before playoff games, calling people names. When he got on the court, he wasn't. He was focused. He was locked in. The Heat are still a young team. This is their third year with this big three experiment. We've never seen this happen before in really all of professional sports. And you have to worry about the Heat getting lethargic, getting entitled, which is the way that you put it. And you really have to worry about the Pacers just being the more committed team.
Yeah, and one team you never see get that sense of entitlement, the Spurs.
Oh, that's a transition right there for
you. Western Conference Finals Game 2 yesterday. Spurs beat the Grizzlies 93-89 in overtime.
Spurs have the series in the bag.
Absolutely.
Let's be honest here. The Spurs have the series in the bag. They look cool, calm, and collected. Memphis is in panic mode. People are going to talk all the time about how OKC came back from an 0-2 deficit against San Antonio last year. It's not going to happen this year. San Antonio is a different team, a smarter team, a younger team. They have the energy. They have the physical makeup to deal with the Memphis Grizzlies like few other teams can, and they're going to be a threat to the Heat or the Pacers when they see them in the finals in a few weeks.
Yeah, and not only San Antonio is a different team, the Thunder and the Grizzlies are just two completely different teams. They play a different style of basketball. The Thunder are electric.
Yeah.
They are just good to watch. They are just a fun team.
The Grizzlies grind it out. That's their saying. They grind it out.
They grind it out, and the Spurs can beat that.
Yeah, that's the space that the Spurs play.
Yeah, they were dominant for 42 minutes of that game, and then Tim Duncan, you saw they got tired, took him out, and then the Grizzlies go on this 15-2 run to end the game, and then they put Duncan back in, and it was over.
It's over. And the series is over. The Spurs have to win two of the next five games. Two of them will be at home, or three of them will be at home if it gets to a game seven. It won't. The Spurs have this in control. They look good. Really, you don't want to push the issue, but if they can win in the next two games and rest up for the next series, they'll be in very good shape. And that was the problem last year against the Thunder. They played
tired.
Seven games. They got grinded out. They're an old team. They get tired. And then the Thunder beat them. The Thunder came back and beat them.
All right, so now we want to go on something that hits a little closer to home for me and Brendan here. We're heading off to Penn State next year, and there was a Penn State article by David Epstein, a Sports Illustrated article, about Penn State, and it was kind of misguided. It was titled, "Do Athletics Still Hold Too Much Power at Penn State?" And it was about the medical care that players get, and a lot of people, and it's weird, you saw Penn State get out in front of the story. They never get out in front of the story.
No. They let the stories come to them.
They let the stories come to them. And I thought I was going to come in here and just rant about how everybody's ripping on Penn State, kick them while they're down. But you saw as it developed, the media kind of just pushed this one away.
Yeah.
I mean, I was surprised by that.
And the same thing you can kind of see happen a little bit with Notre Dame. They're two established programs. And I think that the media and college football as a whole likes it when Penn State and Notre Dame are successful. That's when their big programs are top of the charts, like what Notre Dame was last year. Penn State was good, except for the sanctions, obviously. But when the top teams are at the top and the most popular teams are at the top, that's what's best for college football as a whole. And that's where you see the high ratings. That's where you see just general success of college football.
Yeah, and I mean, it's weird you say that, and then you see the harshness that was taken last year with the Sandusky scandal.
Yeah.
And I think the media cashed in on that.
Yeah.
They really did. I mean, there were a few weeks over last summer where you could not turn on ESPN and not see something about
You're
that.
Not biased at all either, though, so it's fine.
I mean, just a little bit.
I do think that, and I will disagree with you a little bit, I think that the athletes do have a lot of power. I think that the athletes, because of the popularity of the program, Penn State football, so popular. Obviously, I'm going to Penn State. I was looking at reviews of Penn State. The most negative review I saw was people saying, hey, everyone's so committed to Paterno. Everyone's so committed to the football team. They know what they did. People transferred because of that. Yeah. Not only football players, but students transferred. At a college, the students transferred because of this. Penn State, the athletics do play a two major role. As fun as they may be, they do play too major of a role. And we will end on this note. We are
Penn State.